Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
That I took up in my relationship with all apparent dimensions. I put across the Central Park 4 to 5 hours of light till dark. I knew I'd make the most of them. The park was just like in the films, with Frozen giving it a glaze, the haze and then the smog on my bad eyesight. So I killed an eye by going to see John Lennon's house, and where he got away from me and you, and nothing's real. Across from west to east, remembered wrong, I know I slipped and slided through the ice and through the trees. I bumped into a girl I knew, wearing black and singing songs we both knew were about me, and a deep profound regret. The time was wrong, the setting bad, he said he knew.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 609. I'm Amy Matheny, and it's warmed up a little bit here in Chicagoland. But one thing that's making the sunny skies seem a little bit sunnier is the fact that the Supreme Court announced on Friday that they will hear the appeals of same-sex couples challenging laws in 4 states that refuse to license or recognize their marriages. And this is important, and this is significant. Most significant is that I said Tennessee would be the state that took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and Tennessee is indeed one of the states. They are listening to cases from this district of these 4 states. And if you look at the United States, it almost goes down a line, right? From Michigan to Ohio to Kentucky to Tennessee. It's the 6th Circuit, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 6th Circuit. And what they will have to do is now, when the Supreme Court said they wouldn't hear the cases a while back, we were only at we were less than 20 states that allowed same-sex couples to marry in those states. And then it went. And since that time, of course, we are way over 70% of the United States living where you can marry if you are a same-sex couple. So the new questions they will be listening to is they will be listening to two questions that they will be asking. You know, the first is basically is, does the 14th Amendment require a state to license a marriage between two people of the same sex? When this has gone state to state, most states have said it is unconstitutional to not allow same-sex couples to marry. Therefore, same-sex couples have been able to get married. But there's also a second question that they'll be asking, and that is, does the 14th Amendment require a state to recognize a marriage between two people of the same sex when their marriage was lawfully licensed and performed out of state? So what's really interesting is whether there's going to be two parts to this. You know, one, if they answer yes to the first question, then that's it. They won't need to even go to number two, because if they answer that, you know, the 14th Amendment would require states to marry people of the same sex, then this next second question is moot. But if not, then they have this second question, which will you know, determine that other states have to uphold marriages when they're performed in New York or Illinois or a state where you can, California. So it's very exciting. They say the hearing will happen in April. Probably we'll get our announcement and the decision in June. So big, big stuff coming up. You got more gay news going on in this state, entertainment and in the world, plus what's going on in the theater scene. But our interview today, I'm very excited about. I'm excited to have a conversation about the young members of our community and the elder members of our community. And where is the link between feelings from these two disparate, not disparate, but disparate parts of our community? And what's really exciting is that the folks at About Face Theater have been talking with members of the LGBTQ community, young and old, and seeing that really there are some similarities that are rising to the surface, some feelings of isolation, and ways in which both parts of our community are trying to access a feeling of community. And I'm really excited to have Kelly Simpkins on the show today. She has been on many times as a co-host, and also she's been interviewed for her work in the past. And she is one of the creators of the Laramie Project, which is one of the most produced plays worldwide. Not only is it a wonderful queer play about the life of Matthew Shepard, or the way Matthew Shepard's death and life impacted a community in Laramie, Wyoming. So Kelly is on to talk with us today about this project that's in the works, and through these conversations, what it's starting to tell us about some members of our community, young and old. So I'm really excited about that. So sit back. It's a short week for many people. Hope you had a wonderful long weekend if you were off on Monday. And we will be back with Kelly Simpkins on today's Queercast.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Democrats kicked off the new congressional session January 6th by reintroducing legislation to repeal the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, which allows states to refuse to legally recognize gay and lesbian couples married in other states. The new bill, called the Respect for Marriage Act, repeals DOMA entirely. However, prospects for the measures are slim. It only has one GOP co-sponsor, Representative Ileana Ross-Lehtinen of Florida, in a Congress that Republicans dominate.
Tiffany & Company is featuring a gay couple in its latest engagement campaign for the first time, joining an array of other businesses that have tacitly expressed support for same-sex marriage through advertising. The couple in the Tiffany ads are not models, but a real-life New York City couple.
A federal judge declared South Dakota's same-sex marriage ban unconstitutional, but marriage licenses won't be immediately issued because the ruling was put on hold, pending a potential appeal. The state will appeal the case to the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which, in 2006, affirmed Nebraska's right to ban same-sex marriage.
Starkville, Mississippi, the town that became the first in that state to pass an anti-discrimination resolution last year, repealed the law in a closed session. The same lawmakers also rescinded a policy that extended health insurance coverage to same-sex domestic partners of city employees. Starkville Mayor Parker Wiseman has reportedly slammed aldermen for removing LGBT-friendly policies without public debate and begun the process vetoing the board's action. However, the aldermen are able to override his order because the vote to repeal was 5 for repeal, 2 against repeal.
Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran has been fired for authoring a Christian book in 2013 that described homosexuality as a sexual perversion. The Washington Post reported Cochran had just returned to work January 6th at the Atlanta Fire Rescue Department following a month-long suspension for comments in his book, Who Told You That You Are Naked? Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed announced that the city would be separating from Cochran.
North Carolina legislative leaders say they'll ask the U.S. Supreme Court to quickly hear their appeals seeking to reverse lower court rulings that legalize same-sex marriage in the state. Federal judges in Greensboro and Asheville ruled in October that the state constitution's amendment banning marriage equality was unconstitutional.
Missouri State Rep. Elijah Haar has proposed legislation that would allow Christian groups to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation on college campuses while still retaining all the privileges of being a school-sanctioned student group. Haar's bill could easily pass in the GOP-controlled state legislature, where Republicans also enjoy a veto-proof majority in both chambers over Democratic Governor Jay Nixon.
For the sixth consecutive year, The Advocate has compiled its annual list of the queerest cities in America. Dayton, Ohio topped the list, with Atlanta, West Palm Beach, Florida, Lansing, Michigan, and Madison, Wisconsin completing the top five. To rate the unexpectedly queer-friendly places in America, the magazine criteria changes each year.
Zane's New York-based retailer, Saks Fifth Avenue, is asking that a discrimination complaint be dismissed, claiming that transgender employees are not protected by the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The department store chain made the claim in response to a lawsuit filed by Laith Jamal, a transgender former employee who worked in Saks's Houston stores, alleging discrimination, harassment, and a hostile work environment based on her gender identity. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission concluded in a landmark 2012 ruling that sex discrimination under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 includes discrimination based on gender identity.
A Maryland man has pled guilty to stabbing a 15-year-old transgender girl on a metro train. Reginald Klaber, 25, admitted guilt to assault with a dangerous weapon with a hate crime enhancement. He faces up to 15 years in prison.
In world news, Russia has banned people with gender identity disorders from driving. A new decree signed on December 29th by Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev delineates the conditions that disqualify people from driving, which implicitly include people with, quote, gender identity disorders, a category that includes trans people.
Father Martin Dolan came out as gay during a sermon in which he supported marriage equality for same-sex couples in the Republic of Ireland, where a vote on the issue is slated for May. The Dublin Archdiocese declined comment on the matter, pending discussion with Dolan, who was away on a previously scheduled vacation.
An Egyptian court acquitted 26 men who were accused of debauchery after a highly publicized December raid on a Cairo public bathhouse. The ruling was greeted with cheers and jubilation in the courtroom, with some defendants crying in relief. The defendants faced multiple charges, including debauchery and performing indecent acts, and could have faced 1 to 9 years in prison if convicted. Homosexuality is not specifically outlawed in Egypt, but gay men are frequently targeted by police.
What would have been the first legal same-sex wedding in Baja California, a city hall ceremony that Mexico's Supreme Court mandated, was thwarted again. The couple have been trying to get married legally in Mexicali since 2013. However, when the men arrived at the Mexicali City Hall, the doors were shut and the January 10th wedding canceled because the president of the Coalition of Baja California Families reportedly complained that the two men suffer from madness.
In entertainment news, the cast and writers of Showtime's groundbreaking series, Queer as Folk, are returning for a one-time reunion special at this year's ATX Festival in June in Austin, Texas. The award-winning show, which aired from 2000 until 2005, was the first drama on U.S. television to portray the lives of gay men and lesbians.
Sam Smith, age 22, is no longer single. The singer happens to be dating 23-year-old model Jonathan Jongo Zeisel. Zeisel met Sam Smith while working as an extra on the singer's video, Like I Can.
The musical If Then, starring Idina Menzel, will close March 22nd, 1 week shy of its first anniversary. And Sting's Broadway musical, The Last Ship, will close when his stint in the show ends January 24th.
Out director Lee Daniels, who's behind the new Fox hit Empire, has said he was apprehensive about tackling his first ever TV show. Daniels said the experience of doing a TV series has already taught him one thing, how to be a collaborator.
Actor Gary Sinise has pulled out of an appearance at a summit for an anti-gay Catholic group. Legatus, a Christian organization that encourages homosexuals to seek a cure, had procured the star to speak in an upcoming event at the Ritz-Carlton in Florida. In a statement, Sinise said, "When I accepted the invitation to speak at the Legatus Conference on Veterans Issues and share my story, I was unaware of the controversy surrounding some of the participants and their views on personal matters."
Stars will air the BBC production of The Dresser, starring Anthony Hopkins and Ian McKellen. The adaptation of Ronald Harwood's play stars Hopkins as an ailing actor and McKellen as his devoted backstage hand and dresser.
Writer and trans advocate Stephen Ira, 23, the son of Warren Beatty and Annette Bening, issued a series of impassioned tweets after trans teen Leela Alcorn's death. He also said he had experienced conversion therapy himself, using the hashtag RealLiveTransAdult to join others sharing their experiences.
And gossip singer Beth Ditto and now wife Kristen Ogata were finally able to marry legally 18 months after their idyllic commitment ceremony in Hawaii. Same-sex marriage was legalized in Oregon in May of 2014, where the couple is said to have married on New Year's Eve.
And that's the Week in News brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and the rest of you who know who you are. This is Mr. Murray Hill, Mr. Showbiz, 5'4", and nothing more. I am telling you right now, this is the best podcast in the world. What podcast is it? The Windy City Queer Cast. Tune in right now and all the time for free. And tell one of your friends, even if they're not gay. Showbiz.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 19th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
The Book of Merman is the first great comedy of 2015. Join Pride Films and Plays and see what happens when two Mormons ring the doorbell of one Ethel Merman. Order tickets at brownpapertickets.com through February 15th only. Don't miss The Book of Merman.
Lifeline Theater proudly presents the 18th annual Filet of Solo Festival, Chicago's premier celebration of solo performance, storytelling, and live lit. Running Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, now through January 25th, at multiple venues in Rogers Park. More at lifelinetheater.com. Don't miss the 18th annual Filet of Solo Festival. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
So Kelly Simpkins is a Jeff-nominated actress for her role in About Face Theater's The Kid Thing, an Emmy-nominated creator of The Laramie Project, and company member of Tectonic Theater Project and About Face Theater. Through About Face, Kelly has been exploring the lives of often overlooked individuals in our LGBT community, our youth, and our seniors. Standing Underneath Night and Day is a narrative theatrical work in progress about youth, seniors, and the gaps in between, and it explores these intergenerational senses of isolation in our community. There's going to be a public workshop reading of the piece. As I said, it's a work in progress, but they want you to be a part of it. And so I'm thrilled to have Kelly not only come on and talk about the project that she's, I'm sure, very passionate about. I know she is. But also just about this topic and all that she has learned, because it's not something we talk about a lot here on the Queercast, and I know that a lot of our listeners are younger people, and the issue of seniors in our community is a pressing one. So, Kelly Simpkins, how are you?
I'm doing great, Amy. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's so awesome to have you on. I know you've been a regular co-host, contributor in the past, so it is good to have you. To have you back on, so the listeners
can really connect
with you. So, talk to me about what the inspiration for this project was. How did it come to you, or was this your idea?
No, actually, it came about a couple of years ago. We had a pitch meeting at About Face, and SK, who was leading the youth theater at that time, pitched an idea that she wanted to do that was really kind of freeform at that moment in time, about intergenerational loneliness. And at the same time that she was talking about that idea, or really thinking about that idea as a theatrical exploration, they had announced Breaking Ground on this first Midwest LGBTQ friendly senior residence that is now up and running and fully occupied. Mm-hmm. Next to Center on Halsted. And also there was a needs assessment that was done that Mary Morton and the Morton Group did the data collection for, that was commissioned by the Lesbian and Gay Community Fund. So it was the first time, I think, in 10 years or over a decade that a needs assessment had been done for the community. So all of these things kind of simultaneously were part of the pitch that SK made. And I just got incredibly excited about primarily doing a piece or thinking about doing a piece that had senior voices in it, because I think that is a voice that is sorely lacking in our society at large, but certainly theatrically, having that kind of presence on a stage. Mm-hmm. And then this idea of what are these two groups, and part of this needs assessment actually revealed that the seniors and the youth have similar needs that aren't being met. Hmm. So there was this, you know, one of the huge questions initially was, well, why are they so disconnected if they're so similar in so many ways? Mm-hmm. So we all kind of met up and, you know, bandied around a lot of ideas for a little bit of time. And I think because we were all so busy and had our own careers and had so many different projects going on, and it wasn't until January of 2014, we got an NEA grant to kind of embark on the first phase of this work. So we started collecting interviews in July, and those ran until November. And we've collected, I think, about 50 or 51 interviews thus far.
Wow.
And have been meeting regularly since the summer. And there are two other artistic associates that are involved in this, Patrick Anders and Ben Sprunger, and then four other, I call them youth, but they're in their early 20s to mid-20s, have joined us to also collaborate on the piece, but there are four people, Caitlin King, Judson Rose, Al Evangelista, and Reed Motz, who are doing, who have done all of the transcribing, and there's still some interviews that have yet to be transcribed. So it's been a really intense, intensive, and you know, fully encompassing process for me, certainly since July.
So
I've done a number of interviews. And
You know, your background with, I mean, I know you're an About Face theater member, and many people in town probably know you as an actress. I mean, because they've seen you at Steppenwolf or at About Face, or maybe they've seen you in the Laramie Project around the United States or in the HBO film. But you know, I assume they kind of tapped you to lead this, or you said, I have an idea of how to lead this through this process of creating theater through interviews. I mean, that was used in Laramie, the Laramie
right.
Project. Can you talk a little bit about that process and why that's a unique and wonderful process to actually giving voice to these people who may be isolated, lonely, displaced, and don't have as much of a voice in our community?
Well, I think, you know, it's been such an educational process for me, Amy, and I think for everyone that's been involved in this. And, you know, there's so many things that I didn't know. Obviously, I don't have a lot of seniors in my life. I don't have a ton of youth in my life. So just hearing what those two different populations are going through has been so inspiring, so incredibly moving and engaging to me. And we've also interviewed a ton of people kind of in the gap, as it were, who are advocating for these two populations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I mean, we always talk about this with the interview work. There's so much that a human life has to offer, and there is so much poetry in one human being. And I think, you know, we could all, as, you know, fiction writers, perhaps sit down in a room and come up with a story, which many people are doing now. I mean, it's interesting. There have been a lot of kind of pieces I think lately that have seniors as protagonists, main protagonists on the stage, mm-hmm. which I think is fantastic. But I could never find kind of the truth and the poetry and the moving kind of vernacular on my own if I was creating a fictional piece. And I think there's something, too, about both of these populations, and I would say in some ways particularly the senior population, that feels kind of so unseen and so invisible in our society, and particularly queer seniors so forgotten in so many ways. That hearing their stories and hearing their struggles, and you know, this is a community that is the first community that was out, that lost an entire generation of friends and lovers, who have seen so much, you know, that has such a breadth of the spectrum of, you know, what we've all gone through as LGBTQ people in the last, you know, 50 to 60 years, that it has just been so incredibly moving and so many lessons for me just sitting down and talking to these people who were, you know, became activists, who were incredibly political, who were disenfranchised and marginalized and didn't feel like they had a voice or felt like they had a voice when the AIDS epidemic kind of came around, and and feel like they were instrumental in creating a lot of the change that we're seeing now. So it's just, it's incredibly moving to sit down one-on-one with somebody and talk to them about their life and ask them, you know, in some ways specifically pointed questions, but to really have a conversation and just see where they uniquely are as individuals. I don't think you could capture that in a fictional way with as much power or as much insight or as much kind of inspiration that I think we've gotten being in the middle of this process.
When you walk in to interview someone, do you have a set series of a few questions that you're going to ask all of the interviewees?
Well, yeah, and I think some of those, I mean, you know, one of the first questions that we asked everybody initially was, can you define loneliness? So that was kind of a thread that has led us through a lot of those interviews. But as the interview process, you know, kind of evolved, I think a lot of the conversation really became about quote-unquote community. Is there a community anymore? When have you felt like you've been a part of a community? What did community feel like then versus now for the youth today? Do you feel like you're a part of something? Is it in any way similar to what the elders felt like they were a part of when they felt like they were, you know, smack in the middle of community and felt like they had resources in terms of friends and family and places to go and people who cared about them and loved them and political agendas and, you know, things that they were fighting for? So those are two questions that we've asked people. We started asking people about home because this building, you know, them building the senior residence was something that was happening as these interviews were starting. And people moved in. I think the last people moved in October. And yet, you know, as these interviews go, you can have a list of questions. And if it's a true conversation, you know, you are led down little paths and alleyways that you never anticipated. And I think that's one of the beauties, that the interviews kind of lead themselves in a way, even though there are questions, and I always do research on the person that I'm interviewing or have, you know, a series of questions that I'm itching to ask, and then those get kind of transformed depending on how the conversation goes, which I think is really exciting.
Who are some of the people?
Those were the few that we...
some examples of a few people that you talked to? Maybe give me a couple examples of seniors and a couple examples of youth, just a short profile or...
Yeah, well, the first interview I had, just because we're on this podcast, was Tracy Bain. So that was just incredibly exciting because I think she's, you know, been so inundated in this community, as it were, for so long, and has been writing about and giving voice to this community for so long. And she had just done the Youth Summit and has many elders in her life. So it was a great kind of middle person to talk to who's... you know, as you know, incredibly political and had so many wonderful things to say and so many complicated things to say. And I think that's, you know, that's also part of this project that I wasn't anticipating, just how complex people in the LGBT communities. And somebody said, I don't say community, I say communities, because there's so many different subsets of all of these different kind of letters and communities that we have, that there is not one umbrella anymore in the way that I think maybe people felt like there was. So Tracy was the first interview that I had. I went to a thing that they have at Center on Halsted called Senior Voices, and there are meetings Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I met some of those people and set up individual interviews, and those were really incredible, you know. And I think for me, one of the surprises, and I hope this doesn't sound, you know, as it might sound, but I was surprised by the passion and the activism still of many of these elders today. Mm-hmm. I mean, going to demonstrations, having physical disabilities, and getting out and just really living in a hugely present, active life, the things that they're passionate about. So I interviewed a few of those people. In terms of the youth, there were a few About Face company members that we interviewed. FK and Ben and Patrick were also interviewers for this project, and they found some people I thought that were really exciting. And I interviewed a trans masculine youth that was really, really moving. Who's really struggling, I think, in terms of his identity and feeling a part of the world at large, and specifically, this community. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in between. You know, I interviewed Serena Worthington, who works for SAGE, and Laura Brooks, who used to be the executive director of the Broadway Youth Center, a woman named Beth Kelly, who is a women and gender studies professor at DePaul, a therapist who was one of the founders of Live Oak, which is a therapeutic or psychotherapy organization that does a lot of therapy with LGBTQ people. And these were all, you know, kind of middle advocacy people, but really beautiful interviews and incredibly educational to me. Who are teaching and advocating for youth and for seniors. And have also had their own, experiences in the LGBT community. So there's just so, I think that has been, I mean, the writing process has been incredibly difficult for me over this last month, trying to, mine all this material and begin writing from 40-plus interviews and trying to create something that's narratively exciting and has some theatrical, tenor to it. Mm-hmm. But the interview process thus far has been, the thing that I keep going back to over and over and over again. And just, it was such a privilege for me and so inspiring for me. And I think all of the collaborators to be involved in these conversations and really learning something about where we are. And, in many ways, the tether for me is like, what is my community and what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And talking to people who feel like there is no community anymore and feel completely marginalized and don't feel like they are at all in the conversation about gay marriage, because they don't care about that. And so what are we really fighting for? And, that there was a particular time, I think, when the community felt in many ways unified, or that's what some people have said, that there was a unification in many ways of the community, where there were no, where everyone was an other. And I think because there was such an otherness and such such a marginalization of that otherness, and people were, dying by the droves with the AIDS epidemic and HIV, there was a necessity for a community. And I think now, kind of learning, like, who are the people who are voiceless still? Mm-hmm. Who are the people that don't feel enfranchised by anything politically, legislatively, socially that's happening, who still feel like they are left behind and don't have a voice and are unseen and unheard?
Do you find that race or where someone came from, maybe it's whether they're a small town, whether they're born and raised Chicago, that's having an impact on their experience and their sense of community as well?
I think, yeah. I mean, we tried to get, a lot of the people that we interviewed were born and raised here in Chicago. And I think, a lot of other people obviously were in different kinds of towns and then came here at various points along their lives. But I think obviously, you know, I think for the elders, I don't know if it mattered where they were born.
Mm-hmm.
I think because, you know, when they were growing, evolving, coming up and coming out, it was such a different world then,
right,
that,
right.
And it was not anything that has the quote unquote acceptance that it has today.
Right.
And I think there's also those kinds of things, which is, you know, I'm going a little bit on some tangents here, Amy, which I apologize about, but, you know, one of the things that I anticipated was, oh, it's so much easier now. Of course the youth have it easier now. And learning that that's not necessarily true. In some ways, absolutely it is. But in many ways, a lot of the youth are struggling, you know, in ways that I think the elders don't realize. So
and
that's
what are some of those ways? I mean, what do you think is the struggle of the young gay person today, LGBTQ, fill in the blank? What do you think is a struggle that, I mean, it doesn't have to be all of them, but like, what is one that rises to the surface that was surprising to you?
Still being bullied.
Still being bullied.
Still being called names. Still a ton of homophobia in schools.
Mm-hmm.
Not out to parents. Raised in religious households where they are masking who they are,
mm-hmm.
And certainly have a set of friends, which I think is different,
yep.
where that's okay. And, you know, technology plays a huge role in this. You know, there is this, you know, as this one of these therapists that I interviewed said, you know, I thought I was the only gay kid in the world. And kids today at 14 years old, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, cannot feel like they're the only gay kids on the planet because two taps and you can connect to other gay kids.
Right.
And yet it's a very, very different thing to be connected via technology and social media than it is to be connected in person.
Right.
So I think that's something that is creating a lot of fracturing in the community is this idea of a feeling of connection that is not a true experience of
yep.
connection.
Yep. What is the youngest age? I mean, when you're talking youth, what do you define as youth? What do you define as your young people?
I think the youngest one we have is 15,
mm-hmm.
And the oldest is 24.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think the ages, like within the, you know, kind of fundraising sectors for advocacy are maybe 16 to 24 or 14 mm-hmm. to 24, somewhere along those lines,
mm-hmm.
or 23. I think it might be the cutoff. 23 or 24 might be the cutoff.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But there's also a lot of things.
One of my friends and Facebook friends, my friend Kevin, you know, his son transitioned this year and posted on Tumblr, and it's actually become quite a Facebook and I don't know what Tumblr is, so that tells you how old I am.
Yeah,
but Facebook
heard a lot about Tumblr.
Yes, Facebook and Tumblr. Finally, Milo posted his story because he had these images of his birthday every year from 1 until 14 with his pancakes made in the number of the letter on his plate of his age. And it went through, and it's the first time he kind of publicly, you know, just on his own Tumblr account, put himself out there. And it's caught, like, you know, it's caught this zeitgeist on the internet. And if you're one of my Facebook friends, you can go check it out because it's somewhere on my Facebook thread. But, you know, and Kevin said now that because they just last year announced to people through Facebook, you know, that they wanted the world to meet their son now at 15, mm. which is so beautiful. Right. But it is interesting
yeah.
how I bring this up just because Kevin has posted on Facebook, you know, that literally the band Fall Out Boy just posted Milo's story. Like he's getting so many responses from young trans kids out there.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, right? It's this, there's this isolation. And at the same time, like you said, you two clicks and you can kind of find someone to talk to or ask a question to. And I think we are still so at the advent of, you know, what 10 years from now that's going to mean, or 15 or 20 years from now, that's going to mean to an individual. Because
right.
I remember being in college and I did social theater in college, and often we worked with the guidance counselors or psychologists on campus, and whether that was about prepping freshmen for being in college. And I remember, and this has been a while ago, decades ago, the therapist on campus saying, I really want to do a piece about being isolated. And this is when you go off to college, you know, and you're in college and you're on a campus, you're living in a dorm, you know, maybe you're in classes. I mean, you've got, you know, perhaps fraternities or sororities or extracurricular activities. And she said, you know, the interesting thing that at that time she had, and I've never forgotten it. The interesting thing that she said was a person can be isolated in a crowded room.
Yeah.
And I think that that's maybe speaking to this new internet age, showing us that in a meta frame, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. No, it absolutely does. And I think many people have articulated that,
yeah.
You know, that it's not necessarily about being in a group or being present around a lot of people, that there is still, you know, intense loneliness in some of those moments as well.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of getting to the thread of what that is. And I think, as you said, you know, kids are transitioning earlier and earlier these days, and there is, gratefully, you know, an ability to do that, and places that they can go on the internet and people that they can contact that are positive role models.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a way that many of the trans elders did not have at all, the ones that I've talked to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are just so many different segments, I think, of all of these conversations that are incredibly interesting and need, you know, a place or need some sort of validation, because I think we can gloss over, you know, this idea, which is, you know, some people say, well, I don't like the word community. I like population, or I don't think there is, or I don't say community, I say community. So that's been a really interesting conversation to me too. But, you know, we can throw this word around and bandy this word around as much as we do. And yet very few people that I've talked to actually feel like there is a sense of that, or their idea of community is more closely defined as their friends and the people that live in their neighborhoods or their own social circles, that it's not this, you know. And I think because Chicago is so segregated and so spread out, you know, that people feel more isolated in some ways now than they ever have.
Well, is it just getting too big? I mean, are we just such a big community now? We're so integrated that if you need to have human connection or human purpose with another like person, air quotes around the word like, I just mean, so my experience and your experience, I understand it, I empathize with it, I've shared it, I've whatever, is harder to find because there's just so many of us. So it's kind of like trying to, I don't know, you know, I wonder if the diversification of the community has somehow watered it down. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think we're seeing it politically. I think we're seeing it with our not-for-profits. I think we're seeing it with our gay bars. You know, when gay people can go, when gay people used to only go to the one place where you walk downstairs and there were no windows, you know, to meet head to head and discuss life or discuss your troubles or find love or whatever, that is very, very different than I can go to the, you know, TGI Fridays in my small town with my now married partner, or I can go, you know, to the local bar that doesn't have to be LGBT with my gay friends. And, you know, and there's less intention there. I think there is less tension and intention in these environments. And that's the interesting question that I started asking a few months ago on the podcast is like, you know, I don't know that we'll ever become obsolete, but we are in a major change as LGBT, we have been for a while now as LGBT media, but also as business owners and people who think if we say, oh, we're LGBT welcoming or my business is LGBT owned, that holds the same amount of weight if now I should be treated fairly everywhere. You know, if I have laws and protections that treat me well everywhere, so to speak.
But I think that's a huge part of the problem is the diversification, and how do you identify everyone's needs? And I think in some ways, Amy, you know, part of this for me, and this is just my opinion, is that there is, you know, the word empathy and compassion comes up. I mean, there are a number of people who have talked about privilege and race in this. I'm gonna keep saying community, even though I want to put air quotes around that.
Yes.
that there is, you know, a lot of racism still in this community, and a lot of transphobia in this community, and a lot of white privilege in this community. And those are hard things to say and hard things to talk about, and it's something that I am, you know, continuously learning as I've, you know, gone along this process.
Yeah.
But having the kind of, you know, understanding, compassion and empathy for other people who are having experiences in this LGBTQIA, you know, quote unquote umbrella.
Yeah.
I feel like we have gone astray somewhere.
Yeah.
And that there are, you know, so many political advances and legislative advances and cultural advances and diversification, as you're talking about, that, you know, kind of to the naked eye or to, you know, the social sphere, it would seem like, oh, well, of course, of course. Now you guys have fought your fight and you have everything you need. And the truth is that isn't true. I mean, there are, you know, it's why Tracy did that summit this year. And there are so many people talking about homeless youth and people being kicked out and having no place to go. And nobody who cares about them, not even having a place to sleep or food, or people who are coming out and transitioning, and having all of those things happen to them in terms of healthcare, and employment, and, you know, having to be, you know, having to do sex work and, you know, all of these different things that I'm still learning about, in terms of this process, and having a lot of empathy for, you know, a vast majority. And that's been one of the beauties of this process, is that I've gotten to meet a lot of people who have, you know, their own kind of activism, and specifically the trans people that I've interviewed, who have been, to me, some of the most beautiful interviews I've had, because I've learned so much and they've shared so much, and it is a different experience in many ways.
Well, and I think that that's part of the thing. I mean, it would be naive of us to think that racism exists everywhere. Why wouldn't it exist within LGBT people, or
of course, or
privilege, or arrogance, or greed, or, I mean, let's talk about any of the things that we could say that plague society. Why would we think that because we fight one fight or we're one group of people that we're that we could divorce ourselves from the things we bring, you know, the things we bring of our upbringing into our own community, into our own home, so to speak. And I mean, I don't know. I hear you talking and I think, you know, two thoughts come to my mind. One is that we are a very young movement. We are a very young, visible community, if we're continuing to use that word. You know, because we have come out of the closet, because, you know, we are, it is not the color of our skin. We were able to hide, for, you know, up until very recently, in almost total seclusion. And so, with the rare exception, when we can go back 100 years or more, you know, it's the rare exception, the Oscar Wilde or the, you know, I mean, even Gertrude Stein or, you know, I don't know. I mean, Bayard Rustin, I mean, is probably where I say we kind of just even then we were still in seclusion, you know. So, you know, we are a relatively new community and things are happening relatively fast because of advances. And I think perhaps, you know, our heart hasn't caught up with our feet and head or our you know, the leaning in and moving so rapidly has not allowed us to settle, you know, and look right and look left and take care of our own. And the other thing that comes up to me too is this thing, and that I'm hearing from you, and I'm even hearing when I'm sitting here trying to go LGBTQIA, is that have we become so diverse that the intentions are not the same for all? I mean, they should be the same for all, we should say, you know, I mean, every American should want the same thing, or a person living in the United States, you know, who lives under our Constitution. But, you know, once again, perhaps the room has gotten so full of so many people, it is hard to spot that person across the room that you need to connect with or galvanize with or learn something from or provide something to. You know, and it's just become so large, you know, that how do we mine how do we mind the connections? And it's easy to say, well, you can do that on the internet, but those may not be authentic, or they just may be new and different, and how that's going to impact us as individuals. So is right. there a goal for this workshop presentation, which is happening coming up January 24th and 25th at
Correct.
7 o'clock Saturday night and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. These are free. Really fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's a part of the About Face Theater Out Front series. They've been doing a number of readings and works in progress and showing you. It's kind of a nice free way to engage with the creative process in theater. But and it's at the Center on Halsted, 3656 North Halsted, right there in Lakeview. Mm-hmm. But what are your goals for Standing Underneath Night and Day on the 24th and 25th? What are you looking for, and who do you hope will show up to be a part of this process where it is right now?
Well, it's such an interesting question, isn't it?
Well, it may just be to have it heard, you know, and to see what then the audience voice becomes, perhaps a character, or the audience voice becomes clarifying, you know, who knows? I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm hoping for that. Absolutely. I think I am so kind of in the vortex of the writing process right now.
Right.
And it's incredibly tedious and, you know, feels like two steps forward and five steps back. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's in some ways such an antithetical way that I know how to do this process, which is, normally we kind of have a big laboratory, get up on our feet, do a lot of kind of three-dimensional work, theatrical work,
yep.
Imagistic work, and then go to the writing process so that you're writing performance. And this is kind of the exact opposite way, where I'm sitting down and just trying to write from this material.
Yep.
And, you know, going back to the collaborators and having meetings and getting ideas and cuts and theatrical ideas and trying to put those into the play. So my hope for this is that, you know, my own personal goal is to have like 40 or 50 pages that we can share.
Yep.
That might not be, and this is, you know, in some ways I want to minimize expectations of this, not because I'm not trying to have the most, you know, completed and
sure.
Honoring and successful kind of presentation that we could have, which is absolutely my goal. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen after this. I would love for the community to come, and that is like the diverse kind of definition mm-hmm. of this community mm-hmm. and people who are to have seniors and youth. I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, what is that this is not an us and them kind of thing. Like normally you walk into a theater and you kind of see a play and you feel like you're in this part of the house and then people are up on stage. So, you know, we're trying to do something that feels much more inclusionary
mm-hmm.
And it feels like we are all a part of this community. Both those on stage speaking these words, those in the house who said these words, and those who are witnessing this event,
mm-hmm.
who are also the people in the event in many ways.
Yeah.
Which I think is also the beauty of this work, is that it is kind of one community talking to another community
yeah.
in many ways. So I hope the interviewees come. I hope people who are in both of these populations come, and that is the senior and youth population, so that they can actually be in a room together
yep.
And kind of get down, you know, kind of cut through some of these barriers that seem to be present in both of these yeah. communities, and not intentionally whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, the youth
it's
talk about really wanting mentorship and
yeah.
really wanting understanding and wanting to have these kind of connections with elders, and elders seem to really love the youth and want to have those things.
Sure.
Well,
because
you know,
one has the history and the wisdom, right? And one has the motivation and intention and youth and energy, you know? And so it's a really beautiful marriage, those two communities. I really hope people will come out. I know I am going to be there. Standing Underneath Night and Day, it's a part of the AFT, About Face Theater Out Front series. It's free. You know, come and be a part of the process now, so you can say you know, you're in the early stages of this powerful piece at the Center on Halsted, 3656 North Halsted. It's January 24th, Saturday night at 7 o'clock, and Sunday, January 25th at 3 o'clock. It's free, but they do like to get a head count, and you can reserve tickets and get
yeah.
more information at aboutfacetheater.com, and we'll have that linked in our show notes. Kelly, I will see you on the 24th or 25th. We'll be excited to hear other people continue in this conversation. I'm sure this conversation will already pique people's minds, looking for solutions and looking for connections and just trying to see what is today with these two communities. But I think it's a really interesting conversation. I appreciate you being on the show with us.
Yeah, and I just want to say really quickly, Amy, I encourage people to come out because this is the first phase. It's kind of the first showing, and we would love feedback, just what's resonating with people and the connections people are making. And obviously, this will have hopefully many other developmental processes and kind of three-dimensional laboratory processes to become, I think, the full play that it has the potential to become, that I'm really excited about, kind of the future of this piece. But this is kind of the first step, and, you know, we would love to have as much support and as much kind of articulation of what they're seeing and what people are witnessing and what they think about the piece thus far at this phase of the process would be incredibly helpful and really welcome from all of the collaborators, including myself. So thank you so much for having me on the show and for talking about this.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing so many powerful and insightful voices with us through this work. So Standing Underneath Night and Day, it's going to be at the Center on Halsted. Come join the conversation. January 24th at 7, January 25th at 3 o'clock. It's free, but we'd love to see how many people are going to come, they say. So to get reserve your free tickets or to get more information, go to aboutfacetheater.com.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY.
Happy holiday, everyone. Martin Luther King Jr., was honored on Monday, and I have to say to folks, please go out and see Selma. It is a magnificent film. I'll talk probably in my next show about how sad I am that it was snubbed for some major Oscars, but our very own Coleman Domingo, former regular co-host on the Queercast, starring in that film as well. So check it out, and we honor and remember and memorialize Reverend King, and all he did for civil rights movements around the world. So have a great week, everyone. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.